Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we will help you solve your computer and technology troubles. Whether you're having an issue with a firewall or connecting to the internet, we have a couple of experts in the studio to help you troubleshoot. Tony Yang is the operator of Albany-based Gig Computers, which currently manages the computer network here. Also in the studio is Mark Bogosian, owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. If you have a computer or technology question, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Tony, Mark, and your computer calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to answer your computer and tech questions today are Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian. Mark is the owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham, New York. With 35 years of experience, Mark offers a range of Macintosh service and tech support. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. His company began as a hobby, quickly moved into becoming one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one. If you have a question about computers and such, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Tony Yang, Mark Bogosian, welcome back.
Hey, Ray.
How you guys doing?
All right, great.
Great to be here, Ray. Thanks.
Well, before we get on with the usual tech issues of the day, this is from the Washington Post. NSA found a dangerous Microsoft software flaw and alerted the firm rather than weaponizing it. This happened, I guess we heard about this yesterday. I don't know when it happened. Tell us, Tony, about this.
Well, I think the bigger news on that is that the NSA, instead of using it to spy on the users around the world.
As they actually did in 2017.
That's right. You remember that.
Eternal Blue
and the WannaCry virus that came out after all used the same hacking tool. So this is a huge change for the NSA, and I think that's the bigger news than anything else around this whole thing. The exploit itself has to do with SSL certificates that secures the internet connectivity from your laptop to, let's say, a bank or any other institution out there that uses a secure layer protocol. So it is dangerous. Users definitely should go and patch their Windows 10 and 2016 and 2018 servers as soon as they can. I would highly recommend that you just patch your computers. It doesn't matter if you're using Windows 10 or not. The way that I read the information, it should be applicable to all the other versions of Windows as well. So I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have all of the technical documents on it yet. But it seems to me that if this exploit is on that file, it's called the crypto32.dll file. That goes back to Windows NT 4.0, it's 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
So this would have been affecting all these PCs since then. So we need to patch up all the computers out there, not just Windows 10, and that's the best way to approach
it. But most of these would have been, if people have automatic updates, it would have been taken care of already, right?
Yes, that would have been taken care of yesterday.
All right.
So if you haven't done so, please do. I think now that it's known out there, you're going to see people starting to exploit that.
Very interesting indeed. Tony Yang is here. Mark Bogosian is here. Mark, what's new with you?
Well, I can say that we're not affected by the vulnerabilities of Windows.
But Mark, why do you look over at me with this smirk on your face
exactly
when you say that?
But there are exploits for Macs, right?
There are. Generally not as aggressive as some of these for Windows. But yes, there are, definitely. It's always a good idea to have antivirus or spam blocking utilities.
Well, the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551 if you have a computer question. And let's jump on the phone. Stephen in Queensbury. Stephen.
Hey, gentlemen. Hello.
Hello.
I'm in a variable cell area. Can you hear me okay?
So far, so good.
Okay. So I travel a fair amount and will occasionally connect in airports. My question is just how dangerous is that, and does it justify using a VPN?
So, I'm sorry. It must have been my my headphones, but I heard just a few words of the entire.
Oh, do you want to make sure your question? You have...
Yeah, it's a lot better now. But
one ear's not working.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, just how dangerous is connecting on a like a public network in an airport, and is it such that I should invest in a VPN and use that regularly?
So actually, that's a really common question. Glad you asked, because I think users should be educated on that. So when you connect to a public Wi-Fi system, such as an airport Wi-Fi system, or you go to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, as long as you're connected to a secure website, meaning your bank sites, you know, government sites, any of these secure sites that uses a secure certificate, you're going to be fine, because that what that ensures is your communication from your laptop all the way to the server that you're connecting to, it's completely encrypted. So nobody can get in the middle and try to pick that information from you. So it is safe to use. VPNs are better. It's another level of safety. But I think mostly the average user should not have to be concerned about whether or not the public Wi-Fi is secure enough. It is most of the time plenty secure for normal purposes.
All right. Thank you.
Stephen, thank you for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. If you're only getting one channel in your headphones, Tony, you can always grab another set there. There are about 17 sets of headphones on the desk, so help yourself. 800-348-2551. Jesse in West Park. Jesse.
Hi. My call.
Hi.
I'm calling because I have a website problem that I'm hoping maybe you'll be able to help me figure out. I have a gallery page where there are embedded videos, and suddenly I'm realizing that some of the videos are showing up and others are not. So if I go in from the administrator's view, I can see the links are still there, but they are just not working and coming up as videos. So I'm just trying to figure out why that is, and if you have some magic potion you can give me to fix it.
And you're using WordPress to create your website?
Correct.
Well, typically within that document, before you upload it, you would identify that link. There'll be some type of command to type in www.such-and-such. So I assume it's a link to a video site, like a YouTube site.
Yes, it's a link to a video on YouTube, yeah.
Well, other than going in there, you know, again, there's probably a command that will let you highlight that link and then retype it, maybe edit it and retype it, copy and paste it right from the original site, you know, go to that site, copy that link, and then go to your WordPress document.
Okay, I'll keep trying.
Yeah, that's...
Thanks a lot, Jesse. We appreciate the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Computers Today at Tech with Mark Boghossian and Tony Yang. Elliot is in Lenox. Hello, Elliot.
Hello there. I got a question. I've been using Yahoo homepage for a number of years, and I have on it a number of RSS feeds. So I get the headlines, and if I'm interested, I go in. But recently, I'm getting the homepage, but there's the RSS feeds that don't open, and they just say click again and we'll try it again. What's the reason for these RSS feeds sort of flickering on and off on a Yahoo homepage?
Is it has this happened on more than one operating system, or? In other words, on your desktop?
No, I'm using Windows 10, and it's on all of my computers. And, again, when I go to this homepage, some days it's full with all the RSS headline feeds, and other days it isn't. And I'm just wondering, it's sort of random as to when it happens.
Elliot, I would try perhaps a different browser.
Well, good idea.
If you're using Microsoft Edge, which is on standard on Windows 10, download either Firefox or Chrome.
No, I use Google.
You use Chrome.
Oh, you are using Chrome. So then I will switch that to
try the Edge.
Try the Edge or try the Firefox and see if that gets it going. If it does, then that means there's a setting or cache file that's in Chrome. Perhaps maybe it's corrupted. So you may have to clear the cache and then start over again. But try a different browser, because that's going to tell you whether or not it's a problem with the browser.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
You betcha. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Computers and Tech Today with Tony Yang and Mark Boghossian. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Computers Today, Tech Today. Mark Boghossian and Tony Yang here. Three emails and back to the phones we shall go. This is from Ryan. I have a 10-year-old HP PC running Windows 7, recently made obsolete, with an AMD Phenom quad-core processor. The PC runs okay, but my question is this. Does it make sense to upgrade this PC, OS, memory, hard drive, etc., or just buy a new one? What is more cost-effective, pros, cons? And that's from Ryan.
Ryan, I would say in general, once your PC, laptop, whatever device it is, gets into that 7 to 10-year range, it doesn't make any sense financially to upgrade it, because now you got to upgrade all the components in it just to make it into a fairly usable machine. So I will say the general advice is, once you hit that 7-year mark, you should think about replacing it instead.
All right. This is from Kathy. I have Windows 7 and have been advised that it won't be supported anymore. I'm not too alarmed, particularly as Windows 10 is now suspect. Besides upgrading to a new operating system, what can I do, or what shouldn't I be doing, to keep my Windows 7 system safe and secure? And that's from Kathy.
Well, Kathy, the Windows 7, I believe the end of support is sometime in 2021. So you have a bit of time before they stop supporting it. Now, here's the thing. It's to keep a Windows machine running, you can use it for as long as you want without going onto the internet, and it will be safe forever.
Right.
There's no end date on when you can use a Windows machine. So you can take a couple of approaches. One is continue using it and only go to websites that you know. I will stay certainly away from clicking links that you're not sure about. So if you only do banking, for example, and you only read articles off Yahoo's website and things like that, those safe activities will not create any issues for you, and you can continue using that.
Yeah.
The other approach is obviously to upgrade it to Windows 10, and they made that process fairly easy now, where you can almost do a single click upgrade from 7 to 10.
All right. This is from my neighbor, Ben. So I want you to be extra thoughtful about the answers, okay? I have thousands of photos stored on an external hard drive because I don't trust the internal drive, and I'm looking to back them up to the cloud. With all the storage sites out there, Google, Amazon, Dropbox, Microsoft OneDrive, which would you recommend? Is one any better than the other?
Ray, do we know if your neighbor uses an Apple platform or a Windows platform?
No, I do not. But he's mentioned Microsoft OneDrive, so I suspect it's probably a PC.
Tony, I'll let you.
Cloud online backups. I typically have people go on and use Carbonite.
That's what I use, yeah.
Microsoft OneDrive gives, I think, a terabyte of space for free.
Oh, really?
So, any of these services, if you got files that can fit in that category, try any of the free services are great.
Okay. Right. Well, I think the new Office 365 includes OneDrive with it. And if that's the case, I guess one of the differences between a Carbonite backup and a OneDrive type cloud services, you have instant access to the OneDrive. It's basically just another drive, but in the cloud, where Carbonite is a true backup service, so you wouldn't have instant access. You'd have to do a restore from certain volumes to get to your files.
I've used Carbonite for years, and it just sort of runs in the background, and it's been very solid. I mean, it costs, I don't know, X number of dollars a year.
Well, if you want regular access from varying places, so for instance, you put your pictures on a cloud drive in your home, you could be at Ray's house and pull up those pictures on his computer to show the vacation trip or whatever it
is. Right, which I'm not recommending, neighbor of mine. Unless you're bringing a fair amount of whiskey, don't bring any vacation pictures. Hey, let's go back to the phones. Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're up.
Hello. I work in a dental office, and the doctor's required to prescribe electronically. And we use a standalone software program, which didn't work the other day for some reason on one of the devices. So I got tech support on the phone, and they said to go to settings and allow cookies. Always allow cookies. Can you explain what that means?
Delicious, delicious cookies.
Yes. cookies are these, it's basically a file that sits on your computer, and it keeps track of information, such as user ID and password, so that you don't have to retype it every single time. Or it might store settings for, let's say, the software that you're using for a prescription. It keeps some of the common everyday settings on there so that you don't have to retype it every single time. So when they're asking you to enable cookies, what they're asking you to do is to go into your browser and allow what they give you as that cookie file to be stored on your computer. Most computers, if they're just slightly more secure than the default setup, would turn that function off to prevent sites that you don't want from putting cookies on your computer. So this has got to be one of those cases where the cookie store function is disabled, and you just got to go in there and we enable it to allow your prescription software to work properly.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. 800-348-2551 is the number. Computers Today, and Mark Bogosian is here, as well as Tony Yang. Go to John in Canaan. John.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a kind of an upgrade question, I guess, for you. I live out in the country. I live at the end of a distribution system. You know, I live about 2.5, maybe 3 miles from the point that the signal is distributed. So I'm right at the end of the line. We currently have about 4 megabytes on a good day, and on a bad day, we maybe have 2. And we're being besieged with offers to upgrade to levels of like 25 to 100 megabytes. We don't use the signal for anything other than looking at Netflix and very low-level business work, you know, word processing, stuff like that. So my first question is, between 25 and 100 megabytes, does it make really any difference in the quality of the signal that we would receive, or is 100 megabytes just essentially overkill? And the second question is that there are several places in our house where we really can't receive a signal at all. It seems to be being blocked by, in one case, an I-beam, and in the other case, by a brick chimney. Would a higher level of megabytes do anything to ameliorate that problem?
John, you want to go first?
Well, so when you say you're down 2.5 miles from a signal, is that, you mean a wire from Spectrum or from Verizon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so upgrading the bandwidth to a faster speed would certainly make a difference with things like Netflix. Tony, I'll let you comment on the difference between 25 and 100 megabits. And then broadcasting that signal to the other side of the house, I think, would take some type of repeaters within the house.
We have them in. We have them in place, and they don't seem to make very much difference, particularly in the areas that I talked about, where there's a I-beam that was put in when we renovated the house, and that I think is responsible for blocking the signal in one part of the house, and a chimney seems to be in the way of a signal in another part of the house. And I don't know whether the faster bandwidth makes any difference in dealing with that blockage.
Yeah, as far as the signal in your house is concerned, John, having the higher bandwidth will not make any difference when it comes to the signal within the house itself. Now, as far as Netflix is concerned, if you're watching a high quality video, so 1080p video and 4Ks are coming up as well, you need about 18 to 25 megs of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So your 4 meg is going to struggle watching higher quality videos. So upgrading that to 25 meg will make sense. Now, going to 100, I think, is not going to make much of a difference when it comes to watching videos. So I will stick with the 25, but I will certainly upgrade from the 4 to the 25.
Okay.
So do you have any suggestions as to how to deal with the blockage issues?
Ah, yes. You know, I was just thinking about that. There are these what they call mesh network wireless systems that you can buy at any of the retailers over the counter. So
I have a mesh system.
Oh, okay. He's got one.
You do have one. It's still not working.
How big is the house, John?
4,000 square feet.
That's a pretty large house.
Pretty large. So you may have to get one of those more of an enterprise level system.
Get a directional Yagi antenna.
Yeah, stuff that we put in for colleges. You can cover as large of an area as you want. The systems out there right now, I think the Google system is probably the best.
Now, if he went up in frequency, I don't know what frequency he's at, but if he went to 5.8, let's say, would that improve or degrade the long-range signal capability?
Yeah, it actually would degrade it. 2.4 travels through walls and other obstructions much better than 5.8.
I thought so.
5.8 gives you more bandwidth, but it gives you shorter distance. The most devices.
Go ahead.
Yeah, most devices would pick up the best signal that it can pick up. I would just make sure that your wireless access point is AC compatible, so it's 802.11 AC, and then that your devices can use AC as well.
Do you understand that, John?
Well, I was just gonna. No, I don't really.
Okay.
What I'd like to know is, what do I have to order? Just tell me what I have to order.
You have a Wi-Fi router, right?
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Tony.
Okay. Go and search for a company called Ubiquiti Networks. They have a home system.
Okay.
It is very, very good.
Okay.
And you can expand into multiple. More than three, you can have 6, 12, 100 if you want.
All right. Before the FCC asks, you're not on the payroll for Ubiquiti, right?
No, we're not.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
All right. Thank you very much.
I appreciate
good luck, John.
It, John. 800-348-2551 is the number. Steve and Hurley. Steve.
Hi. The first thing you talked about was this problem that NSA announced, and you seem to imply that you could upload a workaround for older systems like Windows 7. Is that right?
Oh, Steve. No, what I was suggesting is that if you run, because the patch, what we're told at the moment is that the exploit only affects Windows 10, Windows Server 2016, and Windows Server 2018.
Mm. Is okay.
It is suggesting that 7 is okay. My thought process, as I read the technical document on it, that the file that it is exploiting is a very, very old file. It goes back to NT 4.0.
This is the crypto.
This is the 32? Crypto 32.
Okay.
So my suggestion is that you go ahead and up whatever OS you're running. Just go ahead and get it upgraded. That way you don't have to wonder. We are certainly doing that with the thousands of machines we have out there.
Was
the point.
You don't have specific hard evidence that in fact it has affected Windows 7, but you're saying from what you have read, it's possible.
Yes.
Okay.
So a whole lot of other people in different forums saying that.
So to do that for myself, how do you go about doing that? You go to Windows updates and you...
That's all you have to do.
Just do the Windows updates. Yep. They'll do the patch.
I see. Okay. Do you have time for one more question?
Certainly.
If you want to destroy a hard drive because it has sensitive information on it, is it adequate just to slam it with a hammer, or do you have to have it shredded by a company?
All right, hand this one over to Mark Boghossian.
If it's a big enough hammer, what you literally want to do is damage the platter. Inside the casing, there's a magnetic platter, and you want to make sure that is physically damaged. So if you have a big enough hammer or you swing hard enough, that should be adequate.
Could you just degauss the whole thing with a heavy-duty demagnetizer?
I think so, but hammer's a lot more fun.
Well, there you go.
Just put on safety glasses and give it a few whacks.
Agreed.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Computers Today, Mark Boghossian and Tony Yang. Jim in Albany. Jim.
Yeah, hi. The other day I got a document from my daughter, when I opened it to print it, I got a script from Norton that said there was a script in it. But I printed it anyway. And sure enough, a day or so later, my machine, it came back. It wouldn't boot up. It said connection test fail. I got error code 3F0. And I want to know if you think that could have been a virus, or it's just a coincidence and that the hardware failed. And then on top of that, if I'm looking for a new computer, what do you think about the new low-cost PCs, the solid-state PCs that they sell?
Okay.
So Windows.
I know Tony likes solid-state PCs a lot.
I do, yes. When it comes to new computers, always get it with a solid-state because it makes the thing run 10 times faster for another $50. So it completely makes sense. As far as the PC not booting up anymore, it is possible that you might have picked up a virus that's preventing it from booting. I will try to get into safe mode and get it restored back.
That's a great idea.
Go into safe mode. That's easy.
You know, I did that. I restored it. It came back, and then it cycled back to the error again. After it was just sitting there, and all of a sudden it went back to the the text screen that and it showed the error again.
I forget.
I shut it off. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to try to change the BIOS and see if that helps.
Now, I forget, Tony, but if you go into safe mode and then restore, then you have to turn off the auto restore and then scan your computer, right, to get rid of that virus, or it's going to keep coming back?
Well, the file itself doesn't go away. You're right. So what you want to do is you want to restore it and do a scan immediately on your entire system, a full scan, not just the system root scan, but a full system scan. Make sure you don't have anything on there. And I will suggest that you run, something like a Malwarebytes as well on top of the antivirus scanner.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And then when I was talking about those solid-state PCs, they have these really low-cost ones. They're like $200 or something like that, and they say if you're not you're not a gamer or a developer, then they're just fine for using word processing, surfing the web, emails. Do you agree with that? Is that worth buying one of those low cost ones?
Yeah, I do agree. These PCs, $300-$400 PCs out there, they are plenty fast, especially when it has an SSD drive in it. They're plenty fast for web browsing and basic office work. So if you're not into heavier gaming needs and video needs, those PCs will work just fine.
All right, let's take a break. It's Computers Today. Tony Yang and Mark Boghossian are here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We're coming back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang here to answer your computer questions. This email came in from Kathleen. The Apple email service installed on my MacBook Air duplicates every single email I receive and send on my Gmail account. How can I get rid of this Apple mail without also deleting my entire Gmail history?
So,
well, Mac man, what do you think about that?
I think what you're describing is when you use the Apple Mail application, it's a little postage stamp on your dock, and you set up Gmail within that, Gmail will indeed show itself twice. So on the top half of the sidebar, you'll see inbox, sent, deleted, junk, and then down below, you'll see those same mailboxes repeated, along with any other mailboxes that you might have created on the Gmail server. And if you can figure out how to get rid of that,
call you,
you're going to be somebody rich and famous.
Oh, really?
Apple blames Gmail and Gmail blames Apple. What it really comes down to is the way that the Apple Mail software reads IMAP accounts, which is what Gmail is, it will frequently duplicate the inbox sent, received, everything on the top and bottom of that bar. So it's really the way that Apple Mail interacts with those IMAP type accounts. The same would happen with Spectrum Mail, with Gmail, Hotmail, any of those IMAP type accounts.
All right, this is from Jerry in Austerlitz. Are there any browsers that will block all the annoying ads that slow down my computer?
I don't think so.
She's mine does. I don't get one ad on, well, knock wood. I don't get one ad on my home computer.
Yeah, the thing about blocking pop-ups is some websites require pop-ups. Just like earlier Tony mentioned, some websites will require cookies. So you may go to a bank site, a doctor site, a pharmacy site, and click on something, and it has to pop up another window to let you log in or do something like that. So I'm not aware of a way to stop many of those pop-ups, whether they're ads or otherwise.
Yeah, unless you're willing to just block all the pop-ups. So every browser has a setting on there that says turn off all pop-ups. So
customizable, though. Chrome, you can customize by website, allow pop-ups on this website and not that website.
So
it takes a little work.
It takes a bit of work. You can't do that. But if you want to just block everything, that's the way to go. You can shut it off so that no pop-ups would come up. Okay. The issue with that is if you got a site, and let's say a bank site, like what Mark said, if you got a bank site that does need a pop-up to give you this function, it wouldn't work.
Right.
All right. No perfect solution.
This one's from Kathleen, subject heading cloud problem. I recently opted into a Verizon cloud free trial in order to transfer my contacts to a new phone. What was transferred were my 60-ish contacts and 525 others that I did not recognize, apparently from someone who had previously had this telephone number. Now I'm worried about cloud services. My mostly rhetorical question is, if this can happen, what else? And that's from Kathleen.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that sounds a little unusual. So it may be the cloud, the Verizon cloud that you're trying is tied to the phone number, where most cloud services are tied to an email address, an ID of some sort. And they'll have multiple levels of authentication to make sure that you are who you say you are. So I wouldn't worry too much about cloud services in general, but I would worry about this particular one if it is indeed tied to that phone number.
Yeah, I will certainly contact support and let them know. And
Interesting one.
Set up a new account right away. That's a weird problem.
Well, thanks, Kathleen, for the most terrifying email we've received on the program. Mary Jo in East Greenbush, you're next.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just want to precede anything I say by admitting that I am a complete rube when it comes to all things computer.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you had mentioned my question has to do with pop-ups, and I know you just talked about pop-ups, and that there can be a potential problem in shutting them down, but I'm about ready to take on that problem because Windows 10, it seems to be related to Windows 10. I keep on getting these pop-ups and I can't get rid of them and I can't do what I want to do because there's this pop-up blocking my whatever. Now, you mentioned that you can turn off all pop-ups. Where is this command?
Depends on your browser.
Is it something in settings?
Yes. It would typically be inside settings, whether you use Chrome, Firefox, or Edge. It will be inside the settings menu. And depending on which browser, it may be slightly different from one browser to the other, but you'd be able to find that easily if you just do a Google search on that, and it'll give you instructions for your particular browser.
But let's also
clarify. Yeah, okay, I use Chrome. So.
Mark, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
No, Mary Jo, I was going to say, so what you're describing may not be an actual pop-up. When we talk about pop-ups, we're thinking that you're on Yahoo and you click something and now an ad for Ford trucks pops up. What you're describing may be, if it is that intense and that frequent, you may have some type of virus or adware or malware. So what's very common is something will, in a sense, infect your system to the extent that if you type in red roses or Google red roses, it's going to redirect, and some people think that's a pop-up, but redirect to a whole new website. And often is some type of spam or malware, adware type thing.
Right.
So if you're getting ads that pop up, that's one thing versus redirects or, suspicious sites that just take over your browser.
Yeah, no, if something is redirecting you, wouldn't the entire screen be full? These are just little squares
often,
in the
lower.
I'm going to try the turning off the pop-ups.
Yeah, well, also try a quick spyware scan. It's a smart thing to do pretty often anyway.
Yeah, okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Mary Jo. 800-348-2551 is the number. Computers Today, Tony Yang, Mark Bogosian, Vincent in Kingston. Vincent.
Hello. My problem is I have Windows 10, and when I want to take a break, I put it in the sleep mode, and when I come back 5 minutes later, the screen has come alive again by itself, and my external hard drive is working. It's active. So I displayed tasks, and it looks like there's a Microsoft program called Animalware, possibly, that's active at this point. I'd like to know what that is and if I'm in any danger.
Animalware. Well, I see Tony reaching for his device here.
Oh, that's the Windows. Okay, that's the Windows Defender. So Windows Defender is a built-in Microsoft protection software for your computer. That's pretty normal. Although I'm not sure why it's running automatically in the background.
It's using my external hard drive. Or at least it's active on that.
Yeah. Well, it does, when it runs, it does scan through all the files. So that would include your external drive.
Oh,
so I don't find that to be surprising.
It will run for a while, and eventually it will turn off and it will go dark again. But it could come back at some point later on.
Yep. Defender is set up to run when the resources is not being drained. So it's got a small system.
But would it actually turn on the screen? In other words,
that's unusual.
Yeah.
I would just do a thorough scan on your system, make sure there's nothing else going on in there. But as far as the Windows software that's running, that's a part of the Windows system. So you're safe there.
Okay. When the screen turns on, it only shows the desktop. It does not show any processing.
Yep. And that's good. That's good. If you're seeing pop-ups, we've got a whole other problem.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Computers Today on the show. And let's go to Margaret in Albany. Margaret.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I purchased a phone the Sunday before New Year's. And on the 31st, the 31st of this past year, was the last day that I was getting, I bought the the iPhone 11. And I cannot, since that day, I have not been able to get my email on my iPhone populated for that day. It waits till the next day to populate. So I get yesterday's mail the next day. Now, it originally waited on the 31st until I called the Apple people. I just made a phone call. I was on the phone for three or four hours and then finally fixed it. And that didn't work. So I went to the Apple store last week. They fixed it. And then the next day it didn't work again. So I'm past my 2-week return policy. By 3 days, because I found out on Sunday after 6 o'clock, it was still not working. Okay. So what do I do?
Well, do you know?
I wanted to exchange it.
Yeah. No, it's frustrating. Do you know what they've been doing when they supposedly fixed it? Did they tell you? Did they reset something?
We changed my Apple ID at the store because it was an old ID and a NICAP ID.
Okay.
And so I had a Gmail account and I have an iCloud account, but they fixed that. They changed that only on my phone. Now I have an iPhone 6 that's still working.
Okay.
And I have a Mac that they use, and they both get, the iPhone 6 is getting all my emails. It's just the iPhone 11. So I can't work,
Sure. And with like the phone, or what email service are you using? Is it a Gmail or a Spectrum, Roadrunner?
It's an iCloud.
Right, but the actual email address that's in there, and I don't want to know the address, but is it at Gmail?
iCloud.
I have a Gmail, but I don't use it. I just use the iCloud. But I can use Gmail. I just don't use it.
Right. Well, the best I could say would be to delete the account and re-enter the credentials, the email address and password.
They've already done that.
Yeah.
It's just not working. So they keep on sending me home with it working, and then the next day it doesn't.
Well,
so I'm just going to
try to get a new
I asked for a new one, and they said no. They said, oh, here, it's fixed, but now it's not fixed.
Mark, in your estimation, is this likely to be a hardware issue?
No, that's what I was getting at. It's not likely to be
hardware.
Well, yeah, it would not likely be a hardware problem, but rather something with the account, which may be out of your control. It could be something on the server itself.
But remember, she says her iPhone 6, she's getting the emails on time.
Right.
I'm getting everything on my iPhone 6 and my MacBook.
So I guess the next logical...
Everything else is working.
Yeah. Well, I think the next logical step might be to back it up, restore the original iOS, and then restore your data back to it and see if that makes a difference. There could be some corruption.
I don't know how to do that. So I keep on having to go up there. But the thing is, if I go up again and it fixes it and I go home tomorrow, I was going to go up there today. How do I know that tomorrow is going to be the same thing as it is today? It's frustrating. Mm. So, okay. I just didn't know if you... I think people should know that, this stuff happens, and I'm going to ask them to give me a new phone. Yeah. So,
all right, Margaret. Well,
all right.
Let us know how you
did
next time these guys are on. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gail and Adams. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I have a question that has to do with my computer is not, I am not on the internet, but I bought WordPerfect because I like WordPerfect versus Word. And I keep getting a pop-up screen every time I try to use Word that says I have to register and there's an email address and I can't do it. How do I get rid of that screen?
WordPerfect.
Gail, generally with software registration, until you have it registered and activated, that pop-up will continue to come up. So you may just have to connect that computer to the internet temporarily, get it activated and registered, and that should be the end of that.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Go to Walmart or someplace, McDonald's, and or the library.
Yes. Anywhere that has internet access.
Will that cause some kind of an anniversary date where WordPerfect will no longer work?
Not to my knowledge. Typically, it's a one-time activation or registration, and then you're all done. So,
God bless you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Decades ago, we used WordPerfect here. It's been a long, long time.
It has been a long time.
I didn't even know they still made it.
I think it's called Corral Draw now, or Corral Office.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. All right, quickly here over to Stan in Sheffield. Stan.
Hey, hello. This is Stan.
Hi, Stan.
I was telling you that I have a Mac Pro, and I have recently installed a second screen, a monitor, so I can see the type a little bit bigger. And I can't get it off the increased size. It's on full screen, and I can't get it off of there. So can you help me get this back so I can move it around and then read my my emails?
So you're displaying to two different screens now?
Yeah.
Okay, and when you say you can't get it off full screen, it's probably not showing all the menus, that type of thing?
I tried everything. There's nothing there that seems to work.
Well, what you should do is go into the system preferences, and in there's an icon for displays. And there, without being in front of it, I can't say what to click on, but you should see each of the two displays represented and pick a different...
You know, that's funny because I can't get into system preferences.
You mean...
When I tried to get into system preferences, it's not no longer in my dock. I don't know what happened and why it went off of that, and I can't get it to read on the full screen to the
Apple.
Right.
Well, I wonder if there's something else going on. Do you see the Apple menu up on the top left-hand corner of your screen?
I don't think so.
Okay, because that's another way to access system preferences.
Yeah.
Do you think that the monitor itself has a hardware, in other words, a button where you can pull back on it?
Yeah.
It must have something.
But it sounds like, Stan, there may be something else going on with the computer. I guess what I would do at this point is shut it down, go back to just one monitor, and take a look and see if you can get into system preferences, things like that. If you've got the cables connected to the computer, there's no harm in plugging in another display while it's hot, that is, while it's turned on. You don't have to shut down. But I would shut down the computer, go back to one display that you know that works, see if you can get into that preference panel, and then plug in the other display panel, the other screen, and see what happens.
Yeah. All right, Stan, thanks a lot. We only have about 15 seconds here. Let's go to Joe in Middletown. Joe, go ahead.
All right, thank you. So when I log into AOL to look at my email, it loads links and videos and ads. If I log into Gmail, it doesn't load anything, at least that I can see. Does that mean AOL might be a little more dangerous in terms of picking up a lot of junk on my computer than Gmail?
We only have about 10 seconds here, guys.
The quick answer to that is probably yes, because the more pop-ups you get, the more chances you have of getting cookies and spyware on your PC.
Okay.
That's the quick answer.
Well, Tony, thank you very much. And Mark, thank you very much. Support comes from Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook at 866-WASH-WAG. At Penny Farthing, socially responsible investment management of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, Amherst. PennyFarthingInvestment.com, Eric Bright, CFA. Once again, thanks to Tony Yang of Gig Computers and Mark Bogosian of Castle Mac Service for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Phones answered today by Ed Rosen. Ed, thank you. Thanks to our producer, Jim Lavoulis. And I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Jeff Stedge, Doug Buffaro, and John Basile join us for a discussion. Get this, guys. Model and life-size trains. Tune in tomorrow at 2. Stand by now for 51%.